So we will reopen our exploration of love. You can measure the degree to which someone truly loves you by the number of no's that you hear from them. You can also measure the degree to which you love another by the number of no's that you say. Now, there are a lot of heads shaking their head no to that statement. Because you believe that love should be able to say no to somebody over 21 or over 18 or someone who's reached the age of reason. Now, we're not talking here about a 3-year-old, so don't give me the argument about, but what about the 4-year-old who's putting his hand in the electric socket?
Does that count if you have an alcoholic in your life and you love them and you see them ruining your life and the lives of those around them? I've been involved in an intervention, and that basically came to, I guess, just saying, this is how you've hurt me, and this is what I would like you to do about it. I guess I can't say no, then.
Well, you could certainly speak your truth. The intervention you talked about was simply speaking your truth, which is, this is how you've hurt me, and this is what you've done, and this is what you can do about it.
Some people believe that if that doesn't work, you should remove yourself from that person's life. It's as if you're saying you can't drink.
No, you're not saying you can't drink. You're saying, I don't choose to be here while you do that. Those are two entirely different things. Do you see the difference? Those are two entirely different things. You're also not saying, for instance, to someone, you can't have another lover. But you might be saying, I don't choose to be here while you're doing that. You need to love yourself as well as you love anyone else. See, if each person is totally honest, if we were in a marriage relationship and you said to me, I want to have other lovers, and if I did not choose to experience that with you, and if that were my reaction, I would say, you may have as many other lovers as you wish, and I don't choose to have that experience with you or to experience you in that way, so I'm now going to depart this relationship. And you may do as you wish, and I will never stop loving you, incidentally. This is called taking care of yourself, not to be confused with a model of never saying no that looks like codependency. We're not talking about codependency or letting someone walk all over you. We're talking about everyone being able to do as they choose.
Just making the healthy choice for yourself.
And then making what you define as the healthy choice for yourself and allowing each person to choose for themselves what they will, because love means my will for you is your will for you. Is there any other truth that is waiting to emerge from the room? Do we feel complete on this exploration of your truth about love? Well, good. That's magnificent. We can move then to our next subject. The topic under discussion is now human sexuality, the experience we call sex. It is far more important than the experience we call love, and that's why it has been made second on the list of importances. What is your functioning truth about sex? Yes, sir.
First of all, my reality is I can't see how sex could be more important than love. I don't see how it could be.
It could be when you understand what sex really is. If you think that sex is intercourse, it would not be.
No, I know it's energy and interreaction and giving of energy between two people, that type of thing, which
yes,
is love in itself.
Bingo. And without that sexual exchange, without that synergistic energy exchange, love would not be possible. It is the exchange of energies that declare themselves to be synergistic that produces the possibility of the experience you call love. You can't love without any synergistic energy exchange at some level.
But is that synergistic energy considered sex?
It is sex. All of us right now are having a sexual experience, whether we know it or not. You see, when we understand what sex is, that it is the exchange of energies between human beings, then we understand that all of life is a sexual experience. Because life itself is energy. It is the energy, das energy. It is the energy. And every exchange you have with another is sexual. In that, we are exchanging life force. It's also sexual in the more traditional understanding of that term, by the way. We're just kidding ourselves when we say it's not. We're denying that aspect of it because we've been told that it's impolite or somehow not okay to think of it in those terms. But I will say something to you. I will confess something to this whole room, which may put me now on the outs with the room. But I will say to you that I have scarcely met a woman in my life with whom I did not have an experience of sexual energy running through me. Upon meeting them, and the better I got to know them, the more I felt that. That has scarcely not occurred. Almost always. In fact, I'll go further. I've even experienced that energy coursing through my body with some men. Now, did I choose to do anything about that with either one of those? Maybe and maybe not. But have I the courage to announce and declare that I experienced the coursing of that life energy that makes me excited about another person? Happy to be in the room with them? What do you call that? What do you think that is? That is life itself announcing itself through you. And the sooner we recognize that, that is to say recognize it, that is to say know it again, the sooner we allow ourselves to know that again, the cleaner we can be in dealing with it. We can announce our agendas to each other. We can declare our truth. We can say what's so, and everybody can be holding five cards. And then we can play a winning hand. We don't have to have anything under the table, no hidden agendas, nothing unsaid, nothing unspoken, and it's all out there. And so whether we're talking about it at that more universally understood level of what sex is, or whether we're talking about it at the higher level that I first described, the exchange of the life force in any form, creating a synergistic energy exchange. Either way, sex comes before love, because in the absence of that synergistic energy exchange, sex would not even be possible, nor would love. In fact, nothing would be possible at all. So I didn't mean to trick you, but really to use this device to cause you to look at really what's truly happening. It doesn't have to feel like this is someone I want to go to bed with. What it feels like to me is this is a person I'm excited being in the room with. This person gets me really excited about being alive. I feel uplifted. I feel enlivened. I feel larger. I feel excited. I have had some male friends who I have loved as deeply as anyone I've loved in my life, and who when they call up and say, hey, you want to go out tonight and do something, I'm as excited as any woman could get me when she called me. Yes, let's go do it. Let's go to the game, or let's go do what we're going to do. I've had that feeling of that sheer excitement of being alive and enlivened by that relationship. I'd like to just explain to you a bit before we go to the other comments about the human aura and how the experience of sexual energy is integrated into that larger wisdom. In book three, I asked an interesting question. I thought it was interesting. And the answer I got was more than interesting to me. It was a bit astonishing and totally unexpected. Here's the question that I asked. I said in book three to God, where is the soul? I mean, in the body, I wanted to know things like, well, first I started by saying, where is the mind? I said, hey, God, where is your mind? Is it up here? God said, no, that's your brain. I said, great, where is your mind? God said, your mind is in every cell of your body. And every cell of your body is where your mind is. And the brain is just the physical location of many, many of those cells in a concentrated way that causes it to be capable of acting as a transformer of the energy of your body. So your mind exists in every cell of your body. So I was told. And now scientists are telling us, and doctors the same thing. Medical science is astonished in the past several years to know how individual blood cells seem to have a mind of their own, you know? And when there's an invasion of the host body by some foreign substance or object, the individual blood cells start racing toward the invading place to attack that invading element. And this is how the body responds to disease. But the question becomes, how do the individual blood cells know to do that? How do they even know that the invader has arrived? I mean, what, do they all get on the phone? Or, you know, how do they do this? And the answer is that, in a sense, in a manner of speaking, each cell has an intelligence of its own, a mind of its own. Now, men are very familiar with the concept of certain body parts having a mind of its own. But this is true of all of your body parts. And then I said, well, where is the soul? Is it like in your third eye, or is it, you know, in the middle of your chest, in your big toe, or like, where is the soul? And God said, well, the soul is in none of those places. The soul is all over. And I said, oh, like the mind. And God said, no, I didn't say the mind was all over. I said the mind is in every cell of your body. But your body is made up of more than cells. It is made up of the space in between your cells. And that's where the soul is. Not only in the space in between your cells, but in the space outside of your cells. In fact, said God, your soul is not in your body. Your body is in your soul. Is that a wow or what? I mean, I just stepped back. Even now a chill went up me as I revealed this to you. And the morning that came through in the book, I just went, I started shaking. I went, oh, I said, and then of course I denied it. I said, wait a minute. All my life I have been taught that the body was the temple of the living spirit. That your body is the home or the house or the shelter of your soul. And God said, I know, and all of your life you've been told incorrectly. That is, in fact, not what's so. Your soul is bigger than your body, and in fact, your body is housed inside of your soul. And I still couldn't get it, and I said, this is such a twist for me, I can't quite hold it. Can you help me? And she said, sure. Have you ever heard of a thing called auras? I said, yes, I have. And God said, well, that's about as close as you're going to come in your current vocabulary to describing the soul's location. It is that which is outside, holds in, and then runs and permeates in, as, and through your whole body, and literally holds it together. Even as God's soul holds together the universe. And I said, well, now, wait a minute. If the soul is my aura, see, where does my soul end and Kathy's begin? And God said, nowhere. Kathy's goes like this, and yours goes like this, and in fact, there is no place they end. In fact, there is only one one soul individuating itself around individual clumps to form what you call or imagine to be individual souls. And in order to illustrate, because my mind is very, very dense, I said, I still don't quite get it. God said, where does the air in your living room begin and the air in your dining room end? I said, well, it's kind of like I'm in my dining room and I just kind of walk through and I'm in the living room air. I said, there is no place where it ends. It's just the air. It's the air in the living room, and it's the air in the dining room. It's the God in Neil, and it's the God in Kathy. Oh, I see. Oh, I see. There is only one soul in all of the universe moving in as and through everything and individuating itself as what we call you and me. This is an extraordinary teaching, because in one short paragraph, the mechanics of it were made clear to me. You know, I always held on to the theory, the concept, we're all one. But suddenly, I understood how that could mechanically be so. I suddenly got how that could be the physical reality, in fact, and not just some pie-in-the-sky concept. I suddenly saw it. I was blind, and then I could see it.